First, I'm apologizing for not having a presentation, but this was the thing that prompted me not to work too hard, I guess. So, what are private computations? So I guess the first papers that appeared in computer science about private computation came slightly after the papers that started talking about what is now called secure computation. Sort of the late 1980s, there were several results that have shown that if a group of players want to evaluate a function securely, so assuming that they have private communication lines between them, they want to evaluate a function, and some small portion of the players are corrupt and trying to gain more information than they're supposed to do to have, or disrupt the computation, then they cannot do that. And following that, people try to study only just relaxing this. So we have the general situation as follows. We have some players, P1 up to PN. Each one comes with its own input from some domain. Doesn't really matter, and they all want to evaluate some, so let's say it's just some domain, and we want to evaluate a known function f from d to the m, let's say back to d, it doesn't really, wherever d is some finite, you know, you can think of d as some d equals some 0, 1 to the m, some function. So everybody has an input, we all want to compute the output. Well, that's easy, we can just tell everybody the x's and everybody will compute on its own. The main obstacle that what we want to do is to preserve privacy. So for example, a good example is just election. So everybody just has, we want to decide between two options, 0 and 1, we want to make things, you know, we want to have confidentiality so that at the end we'll know who won, but we don't want to know particular players votes and so on. So that's a good example, and actually voting is actually very easy if we really want to have the tally of the number of players who have voted for a particular candidate. So let's say we are voting for 0 or 1, so we can say 1 if you're voting for option 1, 0 for option 0, so we just want to compute the sum of xi's. Then that's actually a simpler problem, but think of the problem that we just want to find out who won and not exactly by how much. So then even the standard ballot box that we're using is not sufficient, even though it's an additional thing. So we just want to solve this. And the question is, what can be computed privately? So there were a sequence of, I guess, so 1988, there were a couple of papers that presented results showing that you can do this. You can compute even if some of the players are really bad, tolerating up to one-third bad players. But you can actually compute any function. So if at most T players are trying to get information, then all functions are possible. Functions can be computed. So those were, and here, so if we need some restrictions on T, so yes. So if T is less than n over 3, then we know that. Well, I guess if you then. Even if T are really bad, I want this. But if T is less than n half, then if all players follow the protocol, but subset of at most T tr- try to learn more about, well, there's nothing more to learn, so they have their own inputs. They will learn the value of the function, so what they are trying to learn is some more information about the values of the other players. So learn more about inputs of other players. Players, but, well, of course they'll learn something. You, if we are, you know, I voted zero, the others, and somehow a candidate that won was one, then I do have some information about the other votes. There was a majority of one. So something that does not follow from the value of the function. So there are various ways to define that, but essentially the easiest way to do that is that this group of T players, given their own inputs and the value of the function, can simulate exactly the whole protocol without any help. So all the messages that they got come from some distribution. They can generate the same exact distribution without any help. So I guess that's the simplest definition. So they can generate or simulate the same distribution as in the protocol, given just their inputs and f of x1 to x0. So essentially, this is the same thing even for bad behavior. Now, this was, those are the results from 1988. I guess citation here is probably BGW, where G's Goldwasser and Goldwasser and Rigerson, and also D, so that's Chao, Crepeau, and Damgaard. Both of these results. And this was later extended to, so we can also handle n over 2 here, too. So that's a later result by Talrabin and myself. That's in 80. So Daniel will talk about this in the quantum setting later on, trying to get this, which is a much more complicated thing. Now, if you try, so that's known, and everything can be done when you have just trying to guard against the minority of the players. What happens when you pass the minority? So it's quite easy to see that you cannot obtain security for all functions, and some functions cannot be computed. And I guess we'll see the exact proof immediately. So here's a follow. So if we just have n equals 2, t equals 1, and we're just talking about this setting. We are guaranteed that all the players are honest. They will follow exactly the protocol as described. Only one player is trying to learn something. So, of course, there are functions that can be computed privately. For example, we can take the function f from, let's say, just 0, 1, squared to 0, 1, where f of x, y equals the x or of x and y. Well, that's a simple function that can be computed, and the reason why it can be computed is because given x and f of x and y, I know y, so the protocol is quite trivial. Alice tells Bob what's her input, and he can evaluate, and Bob tells y. You know, there's no problem in computing this privately because there's just no more restrictions anymore. So there are functions that can be computed privately. There's no problem. And the question is, are there any more? So the answer to that is somewhat interesting, and so what is known, so I guess most of the results about just private computation, where everybody's honest, and we're just trying to compute privately. There are no deviations, so I guess Shor and Kushilevitz. And that's, I guess, immediately after following this, I guess the paper is 1990, prove the following. If for t greater than n over 2, if f is from anywhere, you have some domain, just a Boolean function into 0, 1, then essentially all the private functions that can be computed are, then essentially f of x1 up to xn is XOR of some subset, xi1, xi2, xij, or possibly the complement of that, or the complement. So what do you mean by that? Well, essentially, if you can compute it for some t, then essentially you can divide each domain into two parts and then consider it as actually just, you know, whether x1, so x1 is essentially a1, disjoint union of b1, and this would be the 0, this would be 1, and et cetera. So essentially, these are the only trivial functions that can be computed, and they can be computed. So that's a characterization, exactly what happens when the function is Boolean. However, if you start considering non-Boolean functions, then essentially we don't know much. So the following example shows that there are more examples. So let's just look at the two-player case. So let's take f from 0, 1 to the n, 2, I guess I need 0, 1 to the 2n, and the function is as follows. You think of the inputs as x and y's, it's 2n, so this is n squared. So we have two variables, both of them are between 0 and less than 2 to the n, and the function f that we are trying to compute is as follows. Well, if x is greater than y, then we want 2x. Let's see. And otherwise, it's 2y plus 1. So this is if x is strictly less than y. So this is a function that can be computed privately by two players. And at least it's non-trivial. It does something. And the following function cannot be computed. So this is okay. And this is not. So f of xy, say, equals 1 if x is greater or equal to y, and 0 otherwise. So this we don't, this you'll see proof immediately that this cannot be computed. But any protocol for this? Anybody has seen this example before? So the protocol is very trivial. So A is holding X and starting, and well, if A's input, say, holding X, is not 2 to the n minus 1, then she tells Bob, my input is not 2 to the n minus 1. And then Bob responds, well, my input isn't 2 to the n minus 1 either. So then Bob says, well, my input isn't 2 to the n minus 2. So when they stop once, they get to the point, and then they know exactly the first one to stop is the maximum, and they know whether it's this or this, and you find the maximum, but you don't get the number that's smaller. You don't get the exact value that the number is small. So there's some privacy kept on here. You do need 2 to the n exchanges to compute this function privately. No, you can't do it with less, but this is a... So there are functions that can be computed privately that are not trivial. Once you pass to three players or more, and there is essentially a characterization. So what can be computed? So the following function cannot be computed. So f of xy equals x and y. X and y, both in 0, y cannot be computed. This cannot be computed privately. And no one private protocol. And here's the full proof. So the proof is almost a foolproof, that appears in the Shor. I guess details of that proof, actually, with many more details, appear in Kushilevitz a year later, a paper by Eyal Kushilevitz himself. So what you have is you look at this function, and Alice is holding X, Bob is holding Y, and if Bob has Y is 0, Bob is holding 0, then he's not supposed to learn anything. He knows that the value of the function will be 0 already, and he's not supposed to learn what A's input is. So the first message that A is supposed to send to Bob cannot depend on her input. If it does depend on her input in any way, then Bob, by getting this message, will learn something about the input he's not supposed to learn. So the first message that Alice has to send to Bob is independent of her input. Okay, so now Bob is holding something independent of A's. He doesn't know, therefore, what A is holding, so he has to send something that's independent of his input. And we can just continue on sending messages that are independent of our input, but the function isn't constant. So there's no way we can compute this. And essentially, So Shor and Kushilevitz, and Kushilevitz later on, do quite more. They actually prove that if there is a one private protocol, then there's a deterministic protocol. Randomness in this two-party case does not help. If you can compute it, then you compute it without any randomness. And clearly this cannot be computed deterministically in any way. That's easy to see. But I just gave you the full proof. So this cannot be computed one private. And essentially the characterization, so if the function f, so you just look at the table of the function f, and if you have here two rows, so you have some x0 and x1 and y0 and y1, and if it's not a Boolean function, but you have something that's, so the value here is a, the value here is a, the value here is a, and here it's b, where b is different than a. If you have two inputs here and two inputs here with this essentially embedded and inside there, you clearly cannot compute this privately, because otherwise you'd get that, and that's if and only if. So this is exactly if no, so if and only if. So these are exactly no one private protocol. Once we pass to three players, we really don't know. So there are all sorts of weird examples where something can be computed too privately between three players, or cannot be computed for with a difficult proof, and we really don't know. We don't have a characterization. So that's the situation. So that's what's known about the classical case when we pass at the end. And the question is, what happens when we have a quantum channel? So this seems like a very trivial proof. Why not extend it to see what happens in the quantum case?
Do you need that much communication?
Yeah. So this example requires that amount of computation if you really want it to be completely private. If you're willing to give away a little bit of information, you can save a lot. Again, look up Kushilevitz. So you can save quite a bit of communication by. So there are more. So the more rounds you add, the more functions you get. It's trivial. Using this example, you can construct whatever you want. Just pad it off with zeros and things like that. Yeah. So actually, this is essentially even if you just get. So here you can get if you just have some advantage on guessing the result probably. If you have an advantage for every input more than half plus epsilon, then you cannot compute it. Yeah. It's pretty strong. I don't remember now exactly if they really get how much secrecy you need and so on. But it's essentially most of the results come from the result that if there is a private protocol, then there will be a deterministic one, so that kills almost everything. Okay, so that's what's known. The question is, well, what happens when we have quantum channel? So the thing is that so let me just point out that this is just an interesting example. So with quantum channel, so client with a quantum channel we can compute any Boolean any function n privately. So I'll just show one private. So for two players, two private doesn't mean anything. Sorry, it does mean. It means because you have to. It's not only two players have all their inputs. So there's nothing to guard if they both try to learn something more than they already have everything. But two includes one. It's less than or equal to two. So I'll just. So the first step is show that one is just this claim for n equals two. And one private. That's the only thing that. And then it's easy to get the rest. So how do you get? So the full details are. So we can think of a. So we're given a function. We can assume that it's given by a circuit. So assume that a function is given. Well, we actually want to do it. We want to do it even efficiently. So if the function can be computed by a small circuit, we want the communication to be small too. Otherwise, it would be even a simpler proof than what I'm presenting here. So actually, it'll give some. The communication will be about O of the size of the circuit. Oh, actually, I'm cheating. Slightly bigger. Honest by curious. They really follow the protocol exactly. If they have to flip a coin, they really flip a coin. So the proof over there, you know, the impossibility proof holds for really honest and not semi-honest. Semi-honest players are those that if they have to flip a coin, then they do follow the protocol, but when they have to select randomly, they might bias their selections. That's what's called usually semi-honest in the cryptographic literature. Maybe I'll say one more thing. Why are people really interested in private computation? So the truth is that they're really interested in the semi-honest and not in the honest. And the reason is because there's a compilation theory. If you assume cryptographic assumptions, then if you have a private protocol for doing something, then you can actually have the players commit their values to the other players and prove using zero-knowledge proof that they are indeed following the protocol. So that gives, immediately, you can extend it to even bad players by detectable. So if somebody deviates from the protocol, he will be detected with high probability. So that's a standard cryptographic trick too. Yes, you write down a protocol that's just one private between two players, and then you can compile it it's a huge overhead when you do it without, you know, in general, but those are the ways that the general theorems are proved. Yeah.
So do you allow people to evade a measurement in this setup and
So currently they're we'll get to that, but currently I'm not allowing them. They really follow the protocol exactly. So there's no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't matter for this protocol, but yeah.
So in the definition of privacy, even for a full protocol, so suppose we don't require that. For all inputs they are able to simulate, and only for like the same most inputs. So then, do some of the functions which are not private.
not well. You really have to avoid all these type of situations. So if you tell me that, for example, for this function we'll never get a 1-1, the function is, you know, it's constant, so it's definitely privately computable. So if we are selecting from some, you know, joint distribution and we know that, then of course this would kill this. The only input are those except 1-1, then this is computable. No, I'm saying you're right. Yes, But I don't know an example where this would be interesting, but the answer to your question is yes. Trivially so.
So I was asking whether,
you have to make sure, so you see, you have to make sure that with no probability, with, you know, the probability that you'll fall on something like that would be trivial. This is exactly a characterization. So assuming that the function is given by a circuit with XOR and ANDs and constant 0, 1. So we can, without loss of generality, assume that. And we'll just simulate the circuit. So the way we'll write down, so let's assume that we have non-local boxes. So a non-local box is a box that you're given X input and a Y as an input, and it spits out an A and a B, such that it selects A completely randomly, flips a coin, A is uniformly distributed, B is uniformly distributed, however, A XOR B equals X and Y. So that's a non-local box, usually. Because you can, so essentially, if you're just on this side, you have your input, you get back something that's completely independent, you know, just uniformly distributed, so you don't get any information. And the same thing on the other side, that's why they're called non-local boxes. But there is correlation between A and B. So that would enable us, of course, to compute the AND of two bits just by the AND function. Just by inputting X and Y, I get A, Alice gets A, Bob gets B, and then just Bob sends B to A, and she gets the AND, and she can tell him what the result was. They're honest. So this would solve our problem for that. And since this is a characterization, essentially from that we can compute any Boolean function immediately, but you can simply follow the protocol. So we actually present the circuit. So the circuit, every node in the circuit will be represented by one player holding one bit, the other player holding another bit, and the XOR of those bits will be the real value of that node in the circuit. And so if we have, if we need to compute, so then the simulation, simulating the circuit, so each node is evaluated. Let's say we have V, that's the value that the node V on the circuit, so it will be written just as A XOR B, where A both A and B are uniformly distributed. Uniformly distributed, but of course we have this restriction. So you can think of, so each side just sees a random bit. So with the inputs we can do that also. So we start with the inputs. I can just write my bit as a sum of two things and send to the other side. I can also just assume that I put my bit to my side and the other side puts zero. It would just be the same. And then if we need to simulate, so if V in the circuit, V itself was the XOR of two things. So we had here some W and some U here. So this is represented as a pair AB. This is represented as a C and D. Then this can be represented as A XOR C, and this can be B XOR D. They don't have to talk to each other. They can just evaluate this. Each one just takes the XOR of these two things, and this is represented okay. So computing this function is not. And then we have this. Then what we really need to do is take A XOR B and do an AND, which is just a multiplication mod 2 with P XOR D. So we just open up and we have, you know, just A times C plus B times C. Well, continue to open this up. And so let's write it. And AD plus BD. So we can evaluate each one of these using the known local box that we have, and then just have do these three additions and evaluate this circuit. So we can, if we have a known local box, things are fine. So the only problem is that we don't have a known local box, but we do have a noisy one. So the following is true. So how to simulate a non-local box? So if Alice and Bob share between them an EPR, then what they can do is, they both do the following. Well, if their input X is zero, then they apply R of, I guess it's 1 over 16th I need. What do I need? Let me remind myself. That's the only thing I... Let me just... I should have put that on the... Yeah, so we just... minus pi over 16, and otherwise, and else, r of 3 pi over 16. So you just rotate. So this is a rotation by pi over 16, and if it's 1, you rotate by this angle, and then you measure according to the distribution, and you get a box which is correct. So you get this. So this gives you this, but with probability. So the probability that this will be true is exactly the cosine of pi over 8, which is 0.85 something for all inputs. So that's, I guess, that's from the paper by Harry, Richard Cleave, and I don't know, Rick Quentin. And D, yeah, it's WVD. and usually when it's this result can be called also the CHSH version, but the difference is that for their protocol you get this for average. If you and you don't do these exact rotations, they do something slightly different. Here it's for any input, you get exactly the same probability of correctness. And I don't really need the fact, and I won't be using the fact, that we are violating the Bell inequality. I don't mind if this was, well, the only thing that's important is that this is half plus epsilon, and epsilon is positive. That's all I need. That the correlation is very, very strong. No, I cannot get even the 3/4 without giving information to the other side. The average case I can do. I can just select a zero from both sides. But the impossibility result that I showed, you know, since Alice and Bob can communicate, they can share a random string. Just Alice will pick a random string and tell it to Bob. There's no problem of communication between us. And that's the only thing that you need to notice, that we don't care. We can communicate as much as we wish. We're not trying to save communication. We're just trying to make things private. Once you notice that, then the result is immediate. Because we get this. And what we want to do is boost this probability up to be very close to 1. That's all we need to do. So boosting this up, well, we just need to do, error correction. That's all. We need to purification. So we get this non-local box with this probability, and now we want to improve it. So take it. Very simple. So just, and things are classical, so there's no problem of cloning or anything. We have our inputs. We can compute this many times as we wish in parallel. We just use several of those EPR pairs. And we get many copies of this. And so now, if Alice has A1 and A2, and Bob has B1 and B2, which are with probability half plus epsilon, A1 or B1 equals the right value that we need, and also A2 plus B2 equals the right value with that same probability. So Alice can compute A1 XOR A2 and send it over to Bob. A1 XOR A2 does not contain any information. It's just a random variable that, just flip a coin with this probability of being 0 and with the complement probability of being 1, take the XOR of that, and that should be equal to B1. So that's the probability of this. So this should be, if there are no errors, so the probability that this will be equal to B1 plus B2 is just, we'll call this P. So the probability that, so Bob checks. Checks if A1 XOR A2 equals B1 XOR B2. The probability of that is P squared plus 1 minus P squared. Two errors or one error. So if it's not, it just tells Alice, well, throw both of them. But otherwise, keep one. Just keep A1, I'll keep B1, we'll throw A2 and B2. So when you do that, so the probability of error after that is, so that's the new probability of error after we did this step. And that, if you write down, this is half plus 2 epsilon divided by, I guess, 1 plus 4 epsilon squared. And this tends very rapidly to 1. So what happens is if you start with 0.55, so if you start with this, yes. So this maps 0.85 to 0.99, and this maps it to 0.9999. Just need to do it 3 times or something like that, and not much more than that. Now the truth is that if you really want to save, you don't need to do anything. You just think of this as a noisy computation and just do the standard von Neumann trick, but with this, so you can do this, just so that the error probability, which will be much much lower than the size of the circuit, and that would take log n levels, and just using this procedure, which is not that great, will require you to actually have the size of the resulting circuit will be about squared of the size of the circuit. So that's paying quite a bit. You can do it much, you can do it more efficiently, because once you're here, it's actually much better to take larger XORs, because the probability of them not being with the error is much bigger. You can do this purification much faster. So the size of the full circuit will be just the size of C plus times log to the size of C will be. That's the size that you'll get for, depending on the error probability that you want. That will be. So that's the way you purify. You get this with almost no error, and you compute. You have to tolerate the error, but standard, just compile the circuit to tolerate errors with the standard way, and you run the fault-tolerant circuit. That's essentially what you do. And that's why it costs some log here.
You said you must go from 0.85 to 0.99.
You don't really need to do that. You can immediately. What I showed right here is that you don't need to do that if you think of a compilation of a circuit, given that you already have, that you have exact XOR, and this is just the only noisy step. So you just do this step once, and then just you already fall into the standard ways of doing it.
But don't you need some communication? That's why you want the only communication.
Yeah. No. The amplification will. No, I need communication now.
Where is the communication?
There will be an amplification, so I do need at least one step of amplification in order to use the standard results. So that would, you know, on average that would be to really get to this, I probably need something like 100 copies so that with this probability of error I'll fail or something like that too. So because I don't have a, you know, if I can't compute the end of 2 bits, so I just gave you the full proof. No, it's not achievable. I want for any input, not for average input. I just told you why you cannot compute. That's the reason why I gave the full proof. Shared randomness is okay, but it's not hard to generate. You see, I can. No. Look, I gave you. Look at the proof I gave you before. I didn't say that Alice cannot send any random variable that she generates to Bob, and she's generating okay. So that's shared randomness. Once Bob will know the same randomness and will get information once he'll send the message. Shared randomness does not help. The proof I gave was shared randomness was allowed. Because it's the privacy doesn't help you to do, you know, just can't compute it privately. So there is something quantum here. Yeah. So you need what you really get. Yeah. It's really not, you know, what you get is a random variable which has no, you know, from your point of view is just random, doesn't give you any information. So this does something that's not the strongest of the correlation, but it does give you some non-local box by, you know, flipping you a coin and giving the other one something correlated to that. You didn't send it. That's something else happening here. Okay, so that gives you two players, and n players is just as simple. Now let's just say how you do that. So the n player. So we just represent any V as A1 XOR AN, where each N minus 1 coordinate are uniformly distributed. From the distributed over so inputs, I just give my, I select n, you know, I select n minus 1 random variables and pick my own variable so that the XOR will be equal to my variable, and I send it to the other players. And then that's input, and then XORing is exactly coordinate-wise, there's no problem, the same thing works. And multiplication, well, we just have to open a multiplication of, so A1 plus AN times B1 up to BN. Well, you just open that up, and that's A1, so that's the summation of AI BJ, and that player I and player J can compute on their own just using the two-party protocol, and then that's just the summation. So we can write the circuit anyway. So that gives us any private computation for any Boolean function that we want. The thing is that we also get private quantum computation too. So it's not just Boolean functions. We can compute any quantum function that you want too. And the situation is quite simple. 5 minutes. Okay. So what So the trick is as follows. What you do is, so for quantum, the quantum case. The quantum case. Well, it's just two first, two player. So one player, and also in the n player case, will do all the work. So he'll have the quantum machine. And what one does is each player, so player Alice teleports to Bob her inputs, but without sending the classical information. So then Bob has Alice's input, but he doesn't have the Pauli frame. He doesn't know which Paulis he's supposed to apply. So this way, he holds his own inputs. He has Alice without knowing the Pauli frame. He can now do Clifford gate operations. He doesn't know what exactly he's doing, but in order to find out what he is doing, there's a classical computation involving Alice's classical bits that can compute privately using the scheme we've just shown. And only later on, you know, whoever needs to get the output will also get the private information about what Pauli operations he's supposed to apply in order to really get the correct input and not just a random state. So when Alice just teleports without getting the classical information, what Bob is holding is just the identity, mixed state, and he's doing the operations. The only problem is that we can do this way just Clifford gates, and we can't get universal computation. So we need something to get universal computation. So Alice teleports to Bob in the same way a Toffoli state. So Toffoli state is just, I guess, one, something about this. So you can actually pick other states. You can pick any one of the Kitaev states that also just have some more state that will enable you. So, for example, the Toffoli state is just, I guess, the summation of AB, A and B, of A and B in 0, 1, and I guess we need half here. So it's just a 3-qubit state, and we teleport each qubit, again, keeping the private information. So now with Clifford operations and these states, you have universal computation. So essentially Bob can run the full computation and then decipher what he's actually doing using this private computation and only get the result to whoever gets the output of the quantum function. The only problem is actually, so that's the protocol. What exactly have we achieved here? I guess it's not that easy to define private quantum computation because when you say that I'm curious and I'm trying to learn, then in the quantum case, you can say, you know, I'm following the protocol. You gave me a state that I don't know, and then I had to move it on, and I forgot it now. And I didn't allow you to forget in the classical case because you could have copied all the information along the way. So you could keep a trace of the full protocol, while in the quantum case, you really can't. So you need to, so to make a reasonable definition of what you mean by private, you actually have to say that all along the way, at least say that all along the way, you could not gain more information, even though that's not honest behavior. So here the definitions are, you know, I don't think that we really know what the good definitions are for putting exactly what we mean by private in the quantum case. But I guess this protocol seems, you know, since what Bob is doing is completely random on the other side, so he's definitely not getting any information. So any definition of private should include this. whatever definition you're taking. Yeah.
How does this contrast with Hartman's cloud computing, shows that for his definition of private computation, the two notions, classical and quantum, coincide?
I don't know. I shouldn't. Yeah.
About the technical case. You could also
add, instead of updating,
you could have used a more simple, very simple repeated statement.
Once you have even an honest OT requires cryptographic assumptions.
I send you a bit, I learned the conventional diagonal, and then after an observation.
Yeah, probably yes. Yeah, yeah. But this gives you also the quantum thing. So. But I guess you could use that also. You could have that too. But then you see that this protocol is simple and does it in a clean way. There you really have to use the fact that OT gives you universal computation, and it would be a big bag, but that's all. But it would just change the constants. That's true. It's not much more than that. For getting end players, the only thing you do is you actually have to teleport through everyone in order to get randomness that's involving everyone, so that no group of subset of the players will. So if you still teleport to one particular player, but you teleport it through all the players till it reaches the last guy, and then you, the Pauli frame is actually distributed exactly that way. So that's the only thing to handle. Yeah. So in this case Bob can actually make the Toffoli gate wouldn't make much of a difference. That's not a problem. You could actually make sure that both by doing it back and forth, you can also add authentication to that, so it's slightly detectable. What I don't know is that it's clearly that you cannot handle really deviating. There are low bounds that show the things. There's certain things you cannot do. So if you look at Kitaev's lower bound for coin flipping. No, it's just computing. I have a bit, you have a bit. We just want to compute the XOR of that, and we want to do that so that nobody will influence the bit too much. Then Kitaev actually shows that there is a strategy by which the one deviating from the call will not be detected and influence the coin, and the probability of getting the right value will be 1 over square root of 2 instead of half. So that means that if you try, you can add all sorts of authentication. Somewhere this should fail along the way. So there are lots of things you can add here that will be detectable, and I must admit, once you add all that, the protocol is that complicated that I don't see where it fails at this point, but it clearly does. Yeah?
So, this talk was for the honest but curious. So, what happens when you have active adversaries for the quantum?
So the only thing you can say is detectable, just like in the classical case. So there are some things that you can detect here. It's not clear. So, for example, if you give me
if you have n larger than 2p, larger equal to 2p plus 1, do that work?
So that's exactly what Daniel will be speaking, and that does work.
Okay.
Yeah, so Daniel is going to be talking about the many people case, and Adam is going to be talking about the two people case.
Yeah, so there'll be more about that.
Just stay tuned.
Okay.
Let me just say one more thing about.
3 hours.
let me just say one more thing about I Wong's question. He didn't ask it, but I should at least answer. If you look at the cheating strategies for bit commitment, coin flipping, function computation, essentially the way the cheating strategy is, instead of giving the input, you just give an entangled input to something that you hold. So it's just a semi-honest strategy. So the question is whether that's called cheating. So if you allow people to deviate, they follow the protocol, but they give other inputs because they're not confined to You know, that's their input. So you can call that, so essentially what you get is that private computation, if you look at semi-honest private computation in the quantum setting, then you can get much more information. For example, computing the inner product function, instead of giving you one particular value, I can take the superposition of everything. The value that I get at the end will give me all your inputs. So one might say that this, therefore, this is not private computation. I got all your input. But on the other hand, if you allow people to put any quantum input as, then that should be called a feature, not a bug. It's just that semi-private computation in the quantum set has interesting features. It's not that it's impossible. But, you know, that's what software makers do when they have bugs. They call it a feature.
One last question.
If you're asking at least, it's an interesting question. It's an open question. I can tell you what this scheme uses about, but not much. But it definitely needs the question whether you need, you know, just on average one or more. I really don't know. It ends up, it's very strongly correlated whether you can really get something stronger than that or you need, or the 0.85. So for example, if we just boost this up to something like 0.9, then we don't need to communicate anymore. So it's just, that's all. So it's just, so essentially you need to boost it just once, and I think that for that purpose, it's probably just exchange, one exchange or something like that would, or, well, probably more than that. Some small constant.